More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bold, reverent, and occasionally random. The Sunday Hang with Clay and Buck podcast starts now.
So Outkick, company that I sold to Fox a couple of years ago, sports media company, you can check it out, outkick.com, hired Curt Schilling, who should be in the Hall of Fame. Do you know Curt Schilling at all, Buck?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, so Curt Schilling became, for those of you out there who are not super baseball fans or super sports fans in general, very famous with the so-called Bloody Sock game when the Boston Red Sox finally ended their long-running sea of futility as it pertained to winning the World Series. He was the pitcher on a team that was very important to making that happen. And so as I was rolling into the studio at Fox on Friday, there was a Media Matters story. Now, Media Matters basically is just a left-wing propaganda outlet that is constantly obsessed with trying to shut down anybody who is anything other than far left-wing. And so they had an article ripping us for hiring Curt Schilling, and I thought this was great. I'm only mentioned as one sentence in the article, but here's how I am described. This is on Media Matters website. Right-wing conspiracy theorist and sexist commentator Clay Travis founded the site. So I couldn't help but laugh as I was reading their article ripping us for hiring Curt Schilling. The only mention of me is right-wing conspiracy theorist and sexist commentator Clay Travis.
I mean, I am jealous, by the way. That's an awesome way to be described by the left. The more when the libs hate you and don't even feel the need to explain why they can call you the things that they do, that's when you know you've really made it. You know,
well, that's what's so funny about it. Like, there's no description of any of that. It's just like, I am those things. They are labeling them. And the funniest response I saw was, oh, you should just read this as sexiest commentator, not true. But if we could add, really change the impact there.
If you're going to call somebody a conspiracy theorist, I think as a general rule, you should have to at least cite what the conspiracy theory is. Because, I mean, in your case, I'm assuming they probably were pulling that from COVID in some capacity, right? That's the most likely situation.
Yeah, I don't even know. I mean, you've been doing the show with me for 2 years. Can you think of anything that I've said on the air that you're like, oh, that's a big conspiracy theory thing? Like,
About vaccines and masks and things that have now all been proven to be correct, or certainly much more correct than what was being said by the Fauci consensus. And so, yeah, to me, it just goes to show you, Clay, when you're over the target, you're taking flack, my friend. So good for you. Good for you in getting that one and getting some heat. You know, there's a I had the tweet up a second ago, but Anne Applebaum is a well-known Soviet historian and has written some very highly regarded books, history books. So that's why I know of her from that. Specifically, I think on Ukraine and the Holodomor, the famine, the forced famine, it should be noted, by the Soviets in Ukraine as part of a effort to liquidate the kulaks and Ukrainians in general. She was somebody who, in response in 2020, in response to the COVID Wuhan lab leak theory, called it Soviet level propaganda in 2020, in response specifically to Tom Cotton talking about it on TV. Why don't people feel any shame for this? Like, if I had accused somebody of Soviet-level propaganda and they were entirely right, I may not like them, but I would at least say, you were right, I was wrong, I shouldn't have said that. That was, and I'm just using her as a stand-in for the entire Democrat media apparatus. None of them feel the need to say they were wrong about this. None of them feel the need to say, I'm sorry. I mean, there were fact checks written about me. There were attacks on me in the New York Times that were total bullcrap. And on top of that, I was right and they were wrong. Are there any apologies? I mean, we just got attacked the Times. I was attacked the Times before that, though. And, you know, I was attacked by PolitiFact. You're now being called a conspiracy theorist by, was it a Mediaite or?
Media Matters.
Oh, Media Matters. Media Matters. Yeah. Well, by the way, that's the, you want your own vertical at Media Matters. You know what I mean? You need to have your own, they need to devote someone to just this show, if they're not already. I think they might be, because when the pseudo public interest and education group of Media Matters starts attacking you, then you know you're doing God's work, because they're the worst alleged media organization or supposed media organization, I think, of all of them. I mean, they're laughably grotesque in what they do. And I just think that we still need to get people to come clean on how they were wrong about all this stuff, because you can still go out and find it out there. They basically slandered people, and they don't seem to care. There's no problem whatsoever with it. And I think that that's something that it's not okay for that to stay out there. And if we had gotten something really wrong about COVID, I'd come on the show and say it. No, in fact, people try to get people fired for saying the right things about COVID, and they feel no remorse whatsoever because it was just attack the enemy with lies. Whatever you have to do, attack the enemy. And you and I are the enemy, my friend, the enemy of the commies.
Which is a good person to be the enemy of. And, you know, I'm happy to be out there taking, you know, shrapnel every single day over this stuff. But what I see is the attacks are increasingly a rear guard action as they are trying to retreat from the battlefield, because they've just been swamped with the actual truth. And the way that I think that's best to explain it, Buck, is no one is getting any of these COVID shots anymore. No one. When you look at the earnings reports, and I was reading over the weekend, Moderna came out with their earnings report. They made $20 billion in profit off of the COVID shots. That's our taxpayer dollars. They now are warning that their dollars profit is diminishing rapidly because nobody's taking these shots. So even people who are out there arguing, oh, the COVID shot is one of the greatest scientific advances of all time, they're not taking it either. In fact, there are going to be tens of millions of dollars of Moderna, Pfizer vaccine doses that are never used because the gig is up. People have recognized that they've been lied to.
I guess getting shot number 12, not such a good idea.
Sunday Hang with Clay and Buck.
Get your wedding advice, Buck. You just put up on Twitter asking people for their best wedding advice for you. And
a lot of insightful stuff.
So
I can, you know, there, you know, there's fun. Obviously, there's funny stuff and tongue in cheek stuff to people, but a lot of really insightful stuff.
Well, I'm excited to have that conversation with the audience tomorrow. We'll open up phone lines. We'll let people have some fun with that because Buck's getting married on Saturday. But we did want to play the audio of AOC losing her mind, which I believe we now have grabbed. This was a little bit earlier in the day on the House floor as Ilhan Omar is being pulled off of her committee assignment. AOC, here she is. Enjoy.
Don't tell me that this is about a condemnation of anti-Semitic remarks when you have a member of the Republican caucus who has talked about Jewish space lasers and an entire amount of tropes and also elevated her to some of the highest committee assignments in this body. This is about targeting women of color in the United States of America. Don't tell me, because I didn't get a single apology when my life was threatened.
What? First of all, Who's supposed to apologize her because there are death threats from lunatics out there, which every public figure that I can think of has to contend with?
It's unfortunate, and I wish it didn't exist.
Yeah.
But this idea that if somebody makes a death threat to you, you are going to use it for political advantage, and it's evidence of how awful your opponents are. Look, it's unfortunate. In the public eye, people say awful things to you all day long, every day.
I mean, just imagine, you know, I'm a member of Congress, and I'm in a floor debate with other members of Congress or whatever, and I'm saying, you know, yeah, guys, I really don't agree with putting my signature on that trade bill, and you know what, if you disagree with me, then you're siding with the rando that emailed me a death threat a week ago.
Yeah.
Is that a fair way to approach anything? I mean, I'm just wondering. Is that like emotional blackmail or what?
It's supposed to be a Trump card. Yeah, it's exactly what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be like, you can't disagree with me because the people who disagree with me are so vile, they're trying to kill me. That, I mean, that's basically what she's saying. And it's a strange way to end that bit. I think we also have Rashida Tlaib, who started to cry over this. So you can enjoy this as well.
Censor Congresswoman Omar in the same week. They introduced a bill to ban federal employees from engaging in censorship. Where are the free speech warriors today? The hypocrisy is obvious to the American people. You are showing who you all are, really.
Gentlewoman's time has expired.
Omar will not be silenced.
Gentlewoman's time has expired.
To Congresswoman Omar,
The gentlewoman's time has expired.
That our country is failing you today through this chamber. You belong to
the gentlewoman is no longer recognized.
Oh my gosh.
Monk, I mean,
what is that?
Who are these emotional lunatics who hear that and think, I'm so glad they're speaking out for me? This is why I say these people don't have actual audiences. They really don't. This is a total, I really believe this, manufactured, social media created idea that the squad is super influential. I mean, can we play that one more time? I mean, she sounds like a completely unhinged lunatic. This is on the floor of the House of Representatives. Whatever your political opinions are, if you heard this woman, would you be like, yeah, I'm with her?
Censor Congresswoman Omar in the same week. They introduced a bill to ban federal employees from engaging in censorship. Where are the free speech warriors today? The hypocrisy is obvious to the American people. You are showing who you all are, really.
Gentlewoman's time has expired.
I know Congresswoman Omar will not be silenced.
The gentlewoman's time has expired.
To Congresswoman Omar,
I am so
sorry,
sis,
that our country is failing you today through this chamber.
The gentlewoman is no longer recognized.
My God.
We need to start grabbing a few audio clips. The last like 6 seconds there is totally unhinged lunatic behavior. Can we just grab that audio and save it? So every now and then when we're upset.
She's not even like being fired from her job, or she's just not on the Foreign Affairs Committee anymore.
I know.
Not everybody in Congress gets to be on the Foreign Affairs Committee. They removed her from a committee. What are we even talking about over there?
Also, man, what a bad public speaker. Just the voice inflection is so strange and off-putting. And this is what I was saying the other day that I think is unfortunate. I really wish that we had, the IQ level of our politicians, I think, is far too low to get very high-level representation. There are a lot of dumb people. I'm going to be fair of both political parties. There are a lot of dumb people who are in Congress and in the Senate and, frankly, in the governor's offices. It's really like they just can't process information, and so they end up just, like, screaming really, like, in a strange way. I mean, that was just super weird to be happening on the House floor.
Yes.
Right? I mean, that's really strange.
It really was just inappropriate.
Yeah.
It just wasn't.
I mean, how could you be like, oh, she made the case that I wish I could make? Yeah, that's what you should want your congressman to make. If you heard the last 8 seconds of that speech, is anybody out there like, I'm so glad she's speaking up for me? Like, the average person in her district could be more eloquent.
I would be willing to bet. I mean, we can check on this. You know who's going to have a speaking slot tonight in primetime on MSNBC? That congresswoman.
Let's hear her one more time, Buck, as we go into the... This is the final 10 seconds. I can't get enough of this.
The gentlewoman's time has expired.
That our country is failing you today through this chamber. You belong to
the gentlewoman is no longer recognized.
And that's going to be A-Block in primetime on MSNBC tonight. She will be there, I guarantee you.
It makes me think like it's like a really bad Lifetime drama when somebody is confronting, they finally found out who the killer was. That's what the screaming session sounds like. Like, you belong in this country. We failed you. Like, I can't even believe that that was a real speech on the House floor just in the last couple of hours. To your point, Buck, over a committee seat.
Right. Like, really? No one's getting sent to prison here. You know what I mean? It's not that big a deal.
It's like not without my daughter back in the way. You'd think that the Iranians were trying to take her daughter away from her. There's an old school 1980s movie reference for you.
Is that Sally Field?
I think it was Sally Field. Ooh, playing an Iranian woman. I don't know. That might have been cultural appropriation.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with season 2 of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carlo Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Junie. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sundays with Clay and Buck.
I teased off the top of the show that something unbelievable had happened. There was such a ridiculous situation that Whoopi Goldberg and I, the View stalwart Whoopi Goldberg and I, have ended up on the same side of an issue. And it has to do with all of this ridiculous censorship of books. Rewriting, basically, for those of you out there who'd missed this story, is going on what seems to be quite commonly.
I would just like to drop this thought out there for millions of people across the country. I think Whoopi needs to invite you on The View, Clay. I think it needs to happen. I'll be in the audience. I'll be cheering you on. Be great TV.
I think they still require their audience to wear masks, but I would love to go on The View as a guest. I think I would be incredible theater. I would definitely get booed. It would be riveting. But they started with it. I pronounce his name Roald Dahl, who wrote Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Matilda, James and the Giant Peach. Probably a good chance that either you or your kids or grandkids have read these books over the last 40 or so years, 50 years, as they have been wildly popular for many children. And they've decided to replace offensive, and offensive is in quotation marks, language throughout his children's books. Sometimes if a kid is fat, they're now referred to as enormous. Would be an example. Even the books that some of these kids are reading.
I'd rather be called fat than enormous. You know, enormous is like super fat, to be fair.
Yes.
And roly-poly is condescending. No one wants to be called roly-poly.
Also, like Augustus Gloop, I think, was that German kid's name, if I remember correctly. His weight is a big part of what happens to him, spoiler alert, as he goes through the chocolate factory.
This is why he's like, Mommy, I need the chocolate river, all of it in my mouth at one time, or else, oh no, I fell in the chocolate river and I float because of my buoyancy.
Yes, this is a very good accent. A fat kid is unable, as you might expect, to restrain himself inside of a chocolate factory. A bit of a bull with a towel kind of situation. He's being taunted.
What is your weakness? Like, what is you don't smoke. I don't think you drink. Like, what is your? I bring it up just because, like, I think I might have an addiction to chocolate, which my wife could now confirm.
Oh, really? That you're that you think would be like, it's a fantastic question. Probably that I am, I'm overconfident. Like, I just think that I can do things that I can't, you know, like, and then
I meant more like food and substances, but okay, that's cool too.
Oh, well, I thought you were going deep into the psychology there. I could eat chicken parm for every meal. I could eat,
okay. You could eat enough chicken parm that you're disgusted at yourself afterwards with how much chicken parm you've eaten.
It's hard for me to stop eating cobbler or pecan pie. Like, I could just go to town on those. It's hard for me to put an ending to it.
To the chubby German kid and Roald Dahl.
Roald Dahl, chubby German kid. They are changing the language in this kid's books. And we know this has already happened with Dr. Seuss, where they even took a step further and said, oh my goodness, there's a drawing or there's a plot point or there's a page where people are out there and they're saying these books can no longer be published. Well, they're now doing it to the James Bond books, which were written by Ian Fleming. I think, Buck, these books would have come out in the early 1960s. I think I am correct. The first ever James Bond book by Ian Fleming would have been written in like 1960, something like that. Does that sound right?
Yeah, Ian Fleming is fascinating in that he was a part of, I believe, British naval intelligence in the Second World War. So he was a guy writing really the greatest spy novel franchise of all time as somebody who had worked as... It's interesting. We're not supposed to call it. The spy is the person who works for the intelligence officer, just so everyone knows. So you don't usually refer to yourself as a spy if you are in the CIA or MI6. The people that are bringing you the information are the spies. And another thing to always keep in mind, if anyone ever tells you they were a CIA agent, Clay, be very suspicious, because anybody who's ever worked in the agency knows it is CIA officer. But Ian Fleming, but I hate when they do TV and they call me a former CIA agent. I'm like, now it sounds like, you know, this was something I made up to impress ladies at bars, which, by the way, let me tell you, they're not impressed. They're like, wait, you work for the government? How much money do you make? They'd much rather hear you're a professional sports player. And I would also say that Ian Fleming was part of Operation Mincemeat, I believe, they actually made a movie of it, which was the landing of the floating of a body with fake invasion plans off the coast of Spain. He was part of that in real
life. Pretty cool.
In actuality. Anyway, sorry, but I think Ian Fleming's a fascinating guy.
Yeah, well, I wanted to make sure I got this right. The first James Bond book was published in 1953, Casino Royale. It appears he published about 12 of them. Obviously, those then have turned into iconic movies that continue to have a great deal of power to this day. But I read some of these books when I was a kid because I was a James Bond guy, and I was like, these are super cool and interesting. And, you know, as you read a book that was written in the 1950s or the 1960s, anything by modern sensibilities is going to sound different. So they are now editing them based on race and sexism related issues, racism and sexism related issues. And Buck, to her credit, Whoopi Goldberg on The View has come out and ripped this idea. Listen.
Look, y'all got to stop this, okay? Just put a disclaimer on it that says, listen, this book was written at this time, you know, or put out the original and what y'all have done, because kids should have the right to read how people thought so that they know how to make the change. But, you know, they tried to do this with Mark Twain as well, because they were so concerned that the N-word was in the book. Well, that's how they did it. That's what it was. We don't want people doing it today, and you don't see it as much. That's how people learn.
I feel like James Carville in Old School when he's, like, on the debate stage and goes, that was perfect. I have no response. She's totally right. She's totally right.
Yeah. She nailed it. I mean, I think she even used the same example as I did on the show when we talked about Dahl's books being edited. Huckleberry Finn, you need to see the totality of that work. And here's what I would suggest. I mean, not that my books have any sign of great historical legacy or anything, but as an author, I find the idea that after I'm dead, somebody can go in and change the words that I published in my book to be awful. If I'm dead, it's a little bit more challenging if the existing author, you know, like some people got upset, Buck, with George Lucas because he went back in and altered some of his Star Wars movies, right? Added different scenes, did different things that he wished he had included. And if the author, creator is still alive, I'm a bit more, you know, open to the idea of, hey, this is my work and I've decided I want to revise it. I don't like it because I think the work should stand for itself because it's a representation of the time and era in which it was created. And if you come back 30 or 40 years later and alter it, I don't like that personally. But I'm at least open to the idea if the creator of the work decides that he or she wants to amend it in some way. But the idea that you change an author's works after he or she is dead is like you should be able to sign something that keeps that from ever occurring.
Well, we can think about, you know, times in history and modesty movements with regard to art and you know, the fig leaves and making sure that, you know, we weren't showing any exposed breasts or, you know, with statues or paintings. And you think about these movements of the past and you think, well, that's an overreaction. That shouldn't be done. That's what they're doing right now. You know, we look historically at points in time when they were saying, oh, we need to cover up all those Greco-Roman statues because of the ladies' boobs, Clay. As we know, we can always
believe. Nobody defends them more than me.
We can always believe in. And we realize that that's so silly, and yet here we are, just with a slightly different framework, doing the same thing. I mean, as others have pointed out, I think it's an obvious point, so I'll make it as well. What happens to Shakespeare? I mean, honestly. Now, I think that the left, there are a lot of people on the left who, you know, Shakespeare's a little tough. They'd have to actually get in and understand some of the stuff. But they know that there's things in there that are politically incorrect, things in there that would be considered problematic. So are we going to start editing Shakespeare? I mean, this is where does this end? You know, when the Soviets did this kind of stuff, when they were suppressing art and theater and literature, we said, oh, how horrible it is. And it was. But somehow the left in this country, which thinks of itself as the place for creativity and for the creative class, they have become the little commissars.
Yeah.
They're all there. Now, to her credit, Whoopi Goldberg, for example, is standing up saying this is crazy. And she's right. And she deserves the applause she got from the audience on that one. But so many on the left, Clay, I mean, she's not going to stop them. This is going to continue.
I wonder, didn't Whoopi Goldberg appear in The Color Purple? Wasn't that when, like, a movie that she was in, based the novel?
I'd have to check.
We'll look it up in the break. Yeah, she was. And the reason why I bring that up is that novel was considered very controversial. I believe it was by Alice Walker. And Whoopi, to her credit, may recognize that the idea, there are scenes in that novel that are very problematic, right? They're tough sometimes for teenage kids to read. That doesn't mean they shouldn't read it, right? And there's a difference. And we talked about this on the show, and I think it's an important one. There's also a difference between changing the language in a book and deciding what's appropriate for a kid to read, right? And I think there's a big difference there, and oftentimes it gets ignored or isn't recognized, and that's an important part of this distinction here.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.